Now, close your eyes for just a moment and imagine a home that's in flames. In writer Sue Miller's words, it looks like the setting for a mad party. Every window brilliantly lighted. The flames jumping into the dark sky, yellow and full and happy. Sparks explode high upward, lighting the air like small town fireworks. Then they drift away, dying, blinking out, like fireflies into the black night. Except that this is not an accident or a controlled burn. In Miller's latest novel, it's arson. And in her fictional New Hampshire town of Pomeroy, New Hampshire, the arsons happen to home after home of wealthy summering visitors, and they all go up in flames. But the question is, why? Is it the inevitable explosion of long simmering tensions between year-round residents and the rich, or the inexplicable randomness that eventually threatens the security of every town, every marriage, every individual at some time in their lives? Interesting questions that Sue Miller explores in her new book. It's called The Arsonist. And she joins us now in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here.
It's great to have you. So first of all, before we dive further into these sort of a few of the many big questions that you ask in the book, I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about the general plot. It's more than just about fancy homes going up in
flames. There are several strands to the plot. And certainly there is this one about the arsons, but it focuses in on really four people, and then most particularly on two people, on a woman named Frankie, who's come home to her family's summer home in Pomeroy, a home they've had for really generations, and it's been formerly was a year-round home, but they are now living there only in the summer, although her parents have just retired there and hope to make it their permanent home. Frankie's come back from Africa, where she's worked for about 15 years as an aid worker. She's a bit burned out. And she meets a man who's had similar questions about his life and seems to have resolved them by buying the town paper in Pomeroy. He's been a reporter, a political reporter, and he's sort of been burned out by that and has decided this is what he's going to do with the rest of his life. They're both middle-aged. So it really traces their relationship with these fires burning in the background and sometimes more in the foreground. Mm-hmm. And then it also deals with the difficulties in Frankie's parents' marriage and adjustment to this place and her father's decline into Alzheimer's disease. So there are many strands, and it's sort of like juggling many balls in the air, keeping them all going at once.
And what was it about focusing part of the heart of the novel around this idea that there may be tensions in a small New England town? Other than the fact that, yes, there have always been tensions in small New England towns, but between the, you know, those who summer there and those who live there year round.
Well, I'm interested in that. I'm interested in those sort of class differences and the ways in which those are not normally acknowledged easily, anyway. But it also seemed to me that it raised the question, which gets raised in these other strands of the story too, of home and whose home this place most deeply is, who really lives here, who really belongs here. And those questions are important for Frankie in terms of where she's going to be, in terms of the sense of, finally, I think, homelessness she's felt in Africa, the fact that she cannot be as deeply at home in Africa as she once thought she might have been, that she's always going to live sort of on the top.
Well, but she also presumes in coming back to the United States initially that transitioning to finding that new sense of home in what was once a familiar place to her would be easier than it turns out to be.
Yes, I think she has always felt that in the States this was the closest thing to home that she had, and it turns out that it is, as you say, more complicated. But I think it reverberates, that whole question of sort of home becomes an issue for a lot of the characters in this book. So the fires themselves helped me sort of raise that. And then I was just interested in the fires. I mean, part of the impulse for the book came from having lived next to a town in New Hampshire, lived in the summer next to a town in New Hampshire, in which there was an arsonist burning many more fires than actually get said in my book. But that seemed like a lot of reality, improbable, the number he set, or they set. There might have been several of them. But I was very, it's this was in 1988, and I was sort of repairing a home that my father had bought that had been inhabited by 100 cats. But more of that later. but in any case, I was there and there for the summer and intensely aware of the fear that was happening 5 miles down the road. It never happened in our town. But even so, if I heard something at night, I was instantly alarmed and awake and alert and wondering if this was the guy finally, you know, coming down the road a little
right.
bit.
I was wondering if you might be able to read a little bit from the book, because there's a moment in the book where you write about the beginning of a letter from Bud, who's purchased the local paper there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also in the middle of, as you said, this budding
romance. Oh, that's good.
It's either good or terrible. Sorry. But then he's in the middle of this romance with Frankie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a letter that he's just a letter from the editor. He gets to write whenever he wants. And this is what he's written. This is sort of a midstream with these arsons. Here's what an arsonist on the loose does to a small town. First, of course, everyone's afraid. That could happen anywhere. But in a small town, the person you're afraid of is bound to be someone you know, someone you probably see regularly in the store, at church, at the post office. The sense of community that it's a bedrock of small-town life is broken suddenly. People look at one another with suspicion and fear, friend to friend, father to son, wife to husband. Everyone is on edge. In our town, the fires have almost always been set at night, so people don't sleep well, listening for the footstep outside on the porch, the splash of kerosene or gasoline or charcoal starter at the doors or windows. Families take turns. Tonight I get to sleep and you stay awake to watch. Tomorrow night you'll sleep and I'll stay up. Everyone is exhausted. The men in the volunteer fire department are exhausted, too. They've risen again and again from their beds and driven across town to try to put out fires that were set with the confounding intention of causing maximum damage. People have armed themselves. We are a community of many hunters, so that wasn't a difficult step. But it was a radical one, getting the guns out before hunting season, having them always loaded and close at hand. It's resulted in at least one accident, fortunately not fatal. But more important, it's brought the fear of one another to that extreme a possibility. If he comes here, I will shoot him. Or worse, let him come here. I want to shoot him.
That's Sue Miller reading from her newest novel, which is called The Arsonist. There are other pretty big themes that you explore in this book, and I want to talk about them in just a second. But I am curious. There was an early reviewer of the book who said that we're living in an age where obviously class differences in this country are very real, but talking about them is more difficult than ever. And not to say that you've ever shied away from difficult subjects in your work, but did that strike you as sort of an interesting thing to tackle now in this day and age, given that, you know, Americans have never liked to talk about class, you know, let alone now?
I think I've written about it before.
Yeah.
in other works, but I wasn't actually. I mean, this book has taken me, 3 years to write, and now it's out 6 months after I finished it, which is actually a pretty quick turnaround. But, and I think the sort of real consciousness of this. I mean, it began, I suppose, with the various protests in New York, you know, but the 1% versus the 99%. But I think it's really only within the last year or so that it's begun to be sort of a political topic and people. But I think even so, people are really reluctant to confront it. I mean, as soon as you do sort of bring it up politically, I mean, for instance, Obama's talking about it, brings the accusations that he's inciting class warfare, essentially. Mm-hmm. So that to make people conscious of this is to be accused, I think, politically anyway, of making trouble, of making people think about things that make them angry at each other. And I think that's one reason that it's difficult to talk about, although I think people are very conscious of
right.
it economically now.
Well, I mean, this book is actually chock full of things that people do find difficult to talk about, whether it's class tensions in a small town or the dementia that Frankie's father, Alfie, is descending into. I mean, tell us a little bit about why that was an important part of the world that this novel inhabits.
I think it, you know, it triggers a lot of questions for the older couple, Sylvia and Alfie, who are Frankie's parents, about home also, which was one thing I wanted to do. But I think it also it provokes an adjustment in the way Frankie thinks about her parents and feels about her parents, and so therefore her sort of assumptions about her family and so forth. She's always thought of her father as the more tender-hearted, the more interested in her, and her mother is as difficult. And her mother is difficult, there's no question. But I think she sort of ends up feeling more sympathy for her mother, because Alfie's descent into dementia exposes some of his weaknesses, some of the difficulties mm-hmm. that her mother's always been dealing with dealing with him. And I think it also raised for me the question of just quite briefly, near the end of the novel, Alfie wanders off and there's the question of what he was looking for, and they assume he was sort of trying to get home in some sense or another. So for me, there was that connection also.
Right. Well, but, I mean, he doesn't say necessarily what home is.
Exactly, yeah. Frankie actually articulates it. I mean, she's sort of thinking about it. What could it have meant to him in the state he's in? And she wonders if it might not have meant a feeling of being at home within himself, a feeling of sort of knowing the contours of his own personhood in a way that he no longer is really able to,
yeah.
Just of comfort within himself and of being received in the world as the person he feels he is somehow.
You know, finally, I'm afraid we've run quite down on time, and there's a lot to talk about in this book that could easily fill an hour, but listeners, I just recommend that you read it. But I am curious because from the perspective of a writer, of a novelist, you have written so many books that really delicately deal with this idea that truths are revealed about people, about characters through tensions and crises and transitions. I mean, there's the crisis in the town of Pomeroy of who's burning down all these houses, and then there's sort of the internal crisis, one of several in the family about truths that are revealed when Alfie descends into dementia. And I'm just wondering, as a writer, unlike in real life where the truths are sort of presented to you as you're experiencing them, how do you decide sort of which aspects of the character to reveal and not as they're going through these trials?
I think you go for what's dramatic, obviously. I mean, and sometimes the drama is sort of more subdued, but, I mean, you're always looking for scenes. I mean, essentially, you're looking for something that has people speaking and talking. I love to do dialogue where these things are getting exposed. There's a long scene where Frankie and Alfie are talking about the nature of his descent and his recognition of it, for instance. And that was really thrilling to me to write. So I think you look at those things which will afford you the opportunity to sort of make it alive on the page, essentially. That's what I hope to do anyway, always.
Well, you do it very successfully in this book.
Thank you so much.
The new novel is The Arsonist. It's Sue Miller's 10th, I believe. Did we get that count?
I think that's right, yes.
Just 10th novel. And she'll be reading from The Arsonist on Wednesday at Newtonville Books. There's more information at our website, radioboston.org. Sue Miller, it was such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Megna.
Well, listeners, stick with us. There's more of the show in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.